On today's Ultimate Tennessee podcast, we catch up with Mike Wilson of the Knoxville News Sentinel as facilities begin to finally reopen in the Southeastern Conference. What will Tennessee's revenue look like this fall if there's social distancing in Neyland Stadium? We're going to get the answers on that and look at the economic impact of a half-full Neyland Stadium in 2020. It looks like college football is going to happen, but what will the numbers look like, and how will you be affected by getting into the stadium and watching a game in Knoxville this fall? Plus, I'm not as optimistic on Tennessee's recruiting efforts as a lot of other people, and I'm going to tell you why. There are two beliefs on Tennessee recruiting, and I'm somewhere in the middle of the two big responses right now to what Jeremy Pruitt and his staff has done. It's episode number 35. It's the Ultimate Tennessee Podcast, and it starts right now.
The top stories and the top insiders on Rocky Top. This is the Ultimate Tennessee Podcast with your host, Will Bowling.
So episode number 35 is a go from the home studio here in Brentwood, Tennessee. I'm Will Bowling, your host as always here on the Ultimate Tennessee Podcast. And joining me from Knoxville this week is Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel, fresh off of a nice morning run. I guess you're on Eastern time, so it's a little bit closer to a lunchtime run. How's it going today, man?
Good, yeah. I love running in the heat. Great punishment.
When I was spending my days running, you could not catch me running after maybe 8 or 9 a.m. unless it was 10 to midnight p.m. Of course. that happened every now and then too. But other than that, I would find so many excuses to sleep in. And if I was not up running by 10 a.m., the chances of me running that day were very, very slim.
Well, we got to keep the quarantine 15 off somehow, right?
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. Well, we'll start, Mike, with the hard-hitting Tennessee news, of course. I say this somewhat sarcastically, although it has been the biggest Tennessee story, perhaps other than recruiting, in the past couple of weeks. And I can almost already hear your eye roll as I ask you this. But have you watched any Gus Dugerton games over the past week?
I have not. Okay. Maybe I'm too old and that's what's going on here. I don't understand the appeal of watching someone else play a video game.
Yeah.
It just doesn't do it for me. I'm glad people are finding enjoyment out of it. I think Tennessee's football Twitter account is very unique these days. with the level of all in on this. And oh man, we could dive down a whole nother rabbit hole on hyping up Barstool to that level.
We definitely could.
That's a story for another day. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly a fun thing. I thought the coaching search element or the announcement coming to Tennessee was pretty neat. I thought Coach Pruitt tweeting about that was interesting. But yeah, I'm surprised it still has this much steam, and maybe that is just me being too old at this point at the ripe age of 31.
No, I agree. I mean, I don't often love the way Barstool's – I don't often love Barstool's methods in the way they get the attention that they do. I certainly respect what they've built, especially with a stream over quarantine where there's no other sports to watch. I'm honestly in that chat and in the viewing audience just because I miss NCAA 14. That was the number one video game played in my household for a very long time, me being the young and spry 22-year-old that I am. But, I mean, I can go back and almost name all the cover athletes that my brother and I were playing on PS2 back in, you know, starting in, what, 2005 or 6? And that was the most wins that Tennessee had in my childhood growing up was on the video game that I was controlling. So,
man, almost, I still have my more PS2. Nostalgia. Still holding on to that PS2, and I think I still have – the Jared Zabransky cover. And now that's a nice throwback.
That's a great
the video game. Certainly wish it still existed, and I would be playing it to an extreme level right now instead of MLB The Show, that's for sure.
Well, now that we've got our Jared Zabransky token mention out of the way, then now we can get to more Tennessee news that actually matters and is actually happening in real life. And I want to start with a story that you've got on the Knoxville News Sentinel website right now at knoxnews.com, talking about social distancing in Neyland Stadium, because it's finally time where we can really talk about tangible plans that college football programs might be putting in place. To be honest, Mike, I hated these conversations a couple of months ago because, as Gary Bettman said in announcing the NHL's plan this past week, anybody who's giving real plans and real dates is just guessing at this point. So you might as well wait as long as you can until you can give out a concrete plan. And we're obviously not completely there yet, but it's certainly an interesting conversation, because when you talk about the revenue involved with the amount of fans in the seats, not just for the University of Tennessee, but for the city of Knoxville, there is at the very least a big economic impact, even if Neyland Stadium is just 2/3 full. And even that might not even be feasible this upcoming fall.
Yeah, it's interesting just to look at, and you know, I talked to a couple people for that story just on what could it look like. And I kind of went into it with the assumption, and when I did the reporting on that, it was before any of these announcements, but went into the story with the assumption that college football is going to happen. And let's just assume it's going to be a full slate, not knowing necessarily that means fans in week one in a limited capacity, no fans all season. But I kind of went into it saying, all right, full season, limited fans. Like that, let's go with that as the tentative situation here. And even then, it's a fascinating dynamic. And, you know, I went into it just thinking from a seating perspective of, okay, well, how do you figure out seating? But obviously, there's a lot more in play there. And maybe the part that I found most interesting from conversations with, you know, sports stadium safety experts and sports economics experts was entering the game might be the most challenging part of all. I mean, that's kind of the congestion point. And so how do you fill a stadium if you are allowed fans? And yeah, but I think now that we know there's probably going to be a season in some capacity, it's just figuring out what that looks like. And I mean, after doing that story and those interviews, I'm really glad I'm not one of the people who has to figure that out.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other question that I have would be, what do you do with students? Because if you're talking about taking a long time to get into a game, students are infamously known for hanging at their tailgates until 10 minutes before kickoff and still having a seat by the time the game is starting, or maybe after the first drive or so. If you've got longer wait times and a longer process in getting into the stadium, we might not be talking about a half full stadium at kickoff. We're talking about a quarter full stadium, because there might be so many procedures in place to get into the stadium. So that's, I think, one of the bigger concerns is, where do you draw the line of who gets into Neyland Stadium this year? Do you cap the students? Do you cap season ticket holders? I wonder where Tennessee is at this point in making those decisions and what that process is really going to look like.
Yeah, I don't know where they are in that process, but my kind of off-the-cuff thoughts are, I mean, right away you can ask, is there even going to be a tailgating scene or an allowed tailgating scene? You don't even know that. If there is, obviously there would be amended situations for that. But I think the thing that's most clear to me, and looking at what Iowa State did this week with making a limited number of season tickets available, I think 7,600 and obviously a much, much smaller stadium than Neyland. My assumption would be, I mean, this is – football is a huge financial revenue stream for Tennessee's athletic department. It's about $100 million a year on average over the last 5 years. This is not a knock on students in the student section, but that's not where the money comes from. The money comes from season ticket holders, donations. And so my assumption would be that's where the majority of the tickets would focus on, if not all. If you're saying, okay, 25% capacity or 16% capacity, my guess is you want as many of those seats as possible filled with people who are giving money. Because I mean, after all, you know, that's what keeps the lights on for these athletic departments.
So in that article you wrote, it talks about the fact Tennessee netted $29 million from football ticket sales in 2018 and an additional $26.3 million from contributions that season. That includes that required donation tied to most season ticket purchases. And you mentioned Iowa State. They had big-time numbers. I believe their athletic director said 700,000 in donations on the first day that they announced their updated ticket plan with just letting those season ticket holders and kind of limiting that number into the stadium. Might not have been the best PR move at this point for Iowa State, but the finances, it worked. And their season ticket sales have reportedly gone way up since they made that statement. You could make the argument Tennessee's television revenue could be bigger with more fans being forced to watch at home, but we've seen a lot of smaller programs, say like Appalachian State. They just cut men's soccer, men's indoor track, and I believe one other sport. I can't remember what it was off the top of my head. But you're seeing smaller programs start to just cut entire sports. I don't think Tennessee is going to be in a situation to do that. I don't think most of the SEC is going to hurt in that way. But what are some of the effects of losing a lot of this football revenue? Because even just with half fans, there's going to be a big hit taken by these big SEC programs.
And that's a reality of it. And probably the complication with the TV element, you're right. I mean, the numbers of people watching those games will go through the roof. I mean, obviously, if limited fans are allowed in, fans are still going to watch. They're just going to watch at home. But those contracts are already in place.
Yep, exactly.
At least from my understanding of the TV revenue sharing contracts and everything. So I'm not sure how much that changes, how much that shifts, or if it's a set X number of dollars. I don't know how that works for certain. So I don't know how much more the schools would get from that. But at this point, I mean, having a season and having games on TV matters. I think it's around 15 million. I think that was, 15 million from media rights, which is, SEC Network, in-house media, all that stuff. I mean, so right there, 15 million is a big piece of that. Because I think their operating costs in 2019, the fiscal year, were around 45 or 50, according to UT. So, I mean, right there, you're taking a big chunk out of that. And obviously those costs are lower as well without having the same game day operation level. But yeah, there's so many question marks of it. And obviously everyone wants football back. But I think moreover, and props to Georgia's Kirby Smart this morning talking about it, but he basically said that the last thing that coaches or athletic directors should do is do this from a financial perspective and ignore the safety element. And I think that's kind of the perspective being taken, or at least it seems that way. That's what a lot of people are saying. So, I mean, that's got to remain the focus. But from a financial perspective, everyone knows how important a football season is.
So, as you know, the Tennessee news cycle never ends, especially on the football side. And that has been the case over COVID-19 simply through recruiting for Jeremy Pruitt and his staff. Certainly no secret that Tennessee has risen quickly up the team rankings. They're up to number two behind Ohio State in the 247 team recruiting rankings. And Mike, there's really two big opinions on Tennessee recruiting this way. First of them is Tennessee is back, and that's mostly being said by people with orange clad glasses. And the other side is being Tennessee is paying all of these recruits and all of a sudden has a bagman somewhere that's dropping the money making this happen. So I'm going to fall somewhere in between the two and try to be as realistic as possible here, because right now Tennessee's average rating in this recruiting class of 89.7 is pretty much identical to its ranking of basically the average player rating of last year's class. It ended up number 10. And Tennessee has 14 3-stars committed, and the next highest amount of 3-stars in one class is Rutgers, who's ranked 18th right now, and they've got 16 3-stars committed. So should we pump the brakes a little bit on the optimism surrounding Tennessee recruiting, or should Tennessee fans be excited about the momentum that they have right now?
No, I think Tennessee fans should be absolutely elated by this. I mean, certainly the numbers are skewed in the rankings based on the number of commitments. I mean, I think they have 24, which is an astounding number. And certainly, I think it's fair to assume there's some turnover coming in that class because a full class is basically 25. And, we're in late May, long way till even the early signing period. So I think it's safe to say there's going to be some turnover in that. But there's some important elements of this. I mean, one, Tennessee has a higher end on this class of prospect than they did last year. Yes, the average rating is pretty comparable, but they're signing some guys that are higher ranked than guys they've signed. couple of five-star defensive guys higher than any defensive player Pruitt signed at Tennessee, and Dylan Brooks and Terrence Lewis. I mean, that those are massive deals. Like, that's a huge deal. But I think what's the most exciting about this for Tennessee is, you know, the summer camps with June and July are normally a time where you see, you know, a flurry of commitments or a flurry of offers that result in commitments. But Tennessee has banked on its evaluations of the early period being good. And they're securing commitments from these kids. And that's a good place to be. I mean, it allows Tennessee now to start getting a leg up on the next class and the next class. I mean, and that's a good position to be in, because anytime you're ahead on recruiting or feeling like you're ahead, you know, you're doing well.
Well, I think, too, the other important thing in recruiting is success breeds success. And we've seen a lot of player recruits in this class already that have gotten more guys on board and sparked some interest in players that you're playing with at camps, playing with in high school, playing against in high school. So certainly that's a positive of the momentum that Tennessee has right now. The other positive is that they're signing just freak athletes, guys that have exceptional laser timed 40 times to their names. And then there's guys like Trinity Bell, who's not a highly rated prospect. You look down that offer list, though, when he's got offers that were committable from Auburn and Florida. He's also a tight end that's 6'7", 260. And I think that you can work with a three-star like that, who Jeremy Pruitt and his staff are saying, look, this group has really developed a lot of good talent into NFL caliber of talent. So, yes, you're absolutely going to take a guy in a 6'7", 260 frame who might be a little bit more raw, but has the potential to turn into a freak athlete on either side of the football.
Absolutely. And, I mean, as much as anything, I think you hear a lot of coaches talk about it is, you know, recruit football players and kind of figure out the rest later. And you can't teach someone to be 6'7 and 280 pounds, but you can teach them to block. You can teach them if he becomes a defensive lineman, you can teach him how to play with a hand in the dirt. I mean, you can coach skills, but you can't necessarily teach these physical attributes of speed, quickness, and all the things that these guys look for. And Trinity Bell is a great example of that. I mean, man, that's a large human.
Yeah. I've been trying to learn how to be 6'7 for years. Hasn't quite worked out for me yet.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to be 6'3, like a modest goal, and I still only got to 6 foot. So we're living with what we've got here, and it sucks. But I think the big thing, you know, you mentioned this is momentum in recruiting is a real thing. And Tennessee, what's impressed me is the coordinated effort of that first week with a flurry of, I think it was Brooks on Sunday, Wilcoxon Monday, Nixon Tuesday, maybe Lewis Thursday. I think that was the streak there. But I mean, every day Tennessee getting a commitment keeps Tennessee in the news, keeps Tennessee in the focus. Other recruits are like, oh man, what's going on over there? Start thinking your spot might fill up. Start thinking, oh, I really think that guy is good. I want to play with him. I mean, recruiting momentum is serious. And Tennessee is a great case study in that right now of what they're doing. But the biggest thing, and we haven't mentioned this is a recruiting staff. I mean, the staff from top to bottom is a recruiting staff. And it's clear that they've gone into this period of this dead period of recruiting where they can't host players, can't visit players. And all right, what are we able to do? And how are we going to do it better than everyone else? And it basically seems like Tennessee's coaches are on their phones 24/7 talking to prospects and getting kids in. And it's really impressive what they've done.
Yeah, there's credit to be given all around. Jay Graham has been a big piece of that going into North Carolina, where Tennessee has been really successful in recruiting. One of the odd things for me, they haven't been very successful in state. Junior Colson, a talented linebacker from Ravenwood, just down the road from me right now, here in Middle Tennessee. He commits to Michigan over the weekend. That's a guy Tennessee really wanted at the linebacker position. William Griffin, another guy who's going to be on the board for Tennessee coming soon, a lineman from Pearl Cone here in Nashville. But the only two commitments for Tennessee right now in state are Elijah Howard, who committed this time last year, the talented running back from the Baylor School in Chattanooga, who's just another freak athlete, runs under 11 seconds in the 100 and probably projects as a corner at Tennessee. And then Walker Merrill, a slot receiver from Brentwood High School, I could almost throw a rock and hit Brentwood High School right now from the home studio. But other than that, Tennessee's kind of struck out on a couple of guys in state. And for a lot of the fan base here, that's a concern, albeit a small one. But that is maybe the one concern you're picking out right now if you're trying to nitpick and find something negative to talk about with Tennessee in recruiting.
It is a little bit surprising. I mean, you look at the top five guys that 24/7 has in the state, you know, Jake Brodingstuhl, tight end going to Clemson. He was never going to Tennessee from my understanding, which is kind of interesting. Junior Colson committed to Michigan. Andre Turrentine committed to Ohio State. I mean, it's hard to argue with that. I mean, Ohio State is the school recruiting the best in the country. I mean, Tennessee's ranked number two behind them. Ohio State is recruiting at an all-time level right now. So if you're a kid committing there, it's like, it's hard to argue with that. But yeah, Tennessee's been shut out of the top 10 kids in state as of now, which I can't imagine it stays that way long-term. But it is kind of an odd thing to see. I mean, they had some success on the top end last year with guys like Omari Thomas and Tyler Barron, getting those guys here, Cooper Mays. So, you know, they hit well there last year, but they haven't really hit that same way this time around.
So another recruiting note on the other side of a Tennessee sport and basketball yesterday, Mac McClung, a guy that a lot of Tennessee fans have a lot of allegiance to, being a almost a Northeast Tennessee guy, just from the southwest side of Virginia, from Gate City. He commits to Texas Tech, a talented transfer from Georgetown. Sounds like Tennessee was never really in the mix for Mac McClung, didn't make his final schools, because at this point, I don't think it's realistic for Tennessee to add another guard. There's also the fact they don't have a spot right now. But if Eve Pons does end up going to the NBA out of the draft, which may be unlikely at this point, but I want to play out this hypothetical. Is there a chance that Tennessee adds another piece to this roster for next season on the hardwood?
I'm going to give you the answer that Rick Barnes would give you. Okay. And that's that they're always looking to add to the roster. I mean, that's, you know, I think I asked him a question like that last recruiting cycle after they signed the big trio. You know, if you're looking to add anyone else, it's like, well, we're always looking. And Santiago Viscovi arrived.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that is a reality. The Mac McClung thing, I never understood. I understand Tennessee doing its homework, its due diligence, reaching out, just seeing what's up. Obviously, he's got ties to Tennessee, and there's an attraction there from a region perspective and everything. And but yeah, I mean, Tennessee doesn't have a scholarship; they're full, assuming Eve Pons comes back. So it didn't make sense. And to me, even if Eve Pons had said, "I'm gone," to me, you're trying to add a big. I don't see the need for a guard on next year's roster as it stands. I mean, the guard lineup is loaded with Keon Johnson, Jaden Springer, Santiago Viscovi, Josiah James. I mean, Eve Pons, if he is back, can swing out. Devontae Gaines is out there. I mean, Victor Bailey is a guy no one's talking about. He might be the best guard on that roster. So they're loaded at guard. The only time I saw it making sense was if Tennessee viewed him as a sit and then play guy. Because then you know, you have a guard for next year, presumably, when you've lost at least two guards. I mean, assuming a Jaden or a Keon goes pro and Josiah James goes pro. But I couldn't imagine Mac McClung wanting to sit. So I never really saw the fit there.
Yeah, the highlight tape's great. The dunks are awesome. But if
he play defense, better, like maybe. That's his reputation. He doesn't play defense. And yeah. Good luck being a guard with Rick Barnes.
I was going to say.
Like, that's not going to fly.
Yeah, that was the Quay Parker experience under Rick Barnes as well. That one didn't last very long.
The fit at Texas Tech is fascinating, too, from that perspective. I mean, he's going to have to play defense for Chris Beard.
Yeah.
Obviously, Beard believes he can do it. McClung believes he can do it, because that's going to be a big part of that.
So, Mike, you've inspired me. I think I might be going for a run this afternoon, maybe maybe a little jog around the neighborhood, maybe some push-ups, some abs. We'll see. We'll see what the Lord has in store for us. But I've also been challenged to run a 5K by you as well. So I've got to get rolling on that.
Yeah, pick it up, man. You know, I was on furlough last week, so I wasn't checking Twitter, but I came back this week and I've been challenged by Emily Proud, who was on TV out there in Nashville, obviously, WKRN. And I was like, well, got to get this done. And number one thought is, all right, who am I challenging? And had to pick you. Sorry to do it, man.
You mentioned you were putting some pressure on me. The only pressure you're putting on me is to buy a bike. Because I think you know, and many people know, that since my retirement from collegiate track and field, running has not been kind to me at all. Honestly, and you know that better than anybody, because we went on a run once and you absolutely kicked me around, for lack of a better term, on that run. I still haven't lived that down, have I?
That is the highlight of my athletic achievements to date, by far. But yeah, no, Grant Ramey and I are on a running binge this summer. Mm. I believe he ran 11 miles on Saturday.
Wow.
I know. So Grant Ramey, big runner out here.
He wanted to get out of the house that bad, huh? Wow, interesting.
Yeah, my guess is it's just escape the kids.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, yeah.
You under six, so that is my guess.
Well, I will report back to you on how the run goes today. I'm going to guess sweaty and not well. It could be the title of my memoir right there. But we appreciate the time, as always, and we'll check in with you soon down the road, man.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me on.